Need one of those curtains that go up. That way we know we're on.
I haven't taken my car for 10 days.
You're kidding? Really?
Two people with that train.
You walked to the train?
Yeah, I've already asked my bureau, housing bureau, to work with Jim, to make him kind of our liaison of economic opportunity issues. I think he's going to be able to separate out the baloney programs from the valuable ones. He'll just have that level of expertise to help us figure out which ones are working.
Okay, the Portland City Council is reconvening. Please read the 10:15 time certain.
Item 1004, appoint Leilani Ovalis to Portland Planning Commission, term to expire January 13, 2010.
I'm proud to present for Council's consideration today a new candidate for appointment to the Planning Commission, Ms. Leilani Ovalis. Leilani will bring a unique and broad perspective to the Planning Commission, which comes at a time when the Planning Commission is tackling significant issues of growth and change throughout the Portland Plan. She's currently serving as Indigenous Organizing Coordinator for the Native American Youth and Family Center. As a community activist, Leilani has empowered youth and adults to engage in the life of their community through civic education, leadership development, and nonviolence activities. As part of a team of young adults, she successfully lobbied Seattle's City Council to get more young people involved in city government through the Get Engaged program. The program was created in 2001 and continues to place young adults on boards and commissions in Seattle. The Planning Commission consistently garnered the most applications. Her experience working with youth in Seattle connected her to urban planning issues and interests that she's maintained in her work here in Portland. Leilani currently serves on the Vision into Action Steering Committee and is a resident of East Portland. She has expressed she is willing to work hard to help plan for Portland's future and will bring a strong voice reflecting Indigenous cultural values and knowledge to the Planning Commission. Leilani, thank you for agreeing to take this important role and for your thoughtfulness, your expertise, and the time that you're going to commit to this. And we all look forward to working with you in the coming years. And I think, Gil, did you want to do the introduction?
Sure. I just wanted to summarize the background, at least that I know very well. And we were very, very impressed with Leilani in the interview process. We had a lot of great candidates. Leilani really rose to the top for her passion, her energy, and her intellect, and maybe her willingness to just dive right into the deep end of the pool here in terms of planning. So we're really thrilled to have her. I think her work with the Native American community, with youth, with the school districts, is really going to add an important perspective on the Planning Commission as we enter this Portland plan process. So we're thrilled. So thank you.
Leilani, would you like to say something and introduce anybody you wish?
That'd be great. Aloha kako, o kalaihono kalani ke ia. Mahalo to the City Council, Portland City Council, and Mayor Potter for having me here today, and for Gil Kelly for accepting me as a new commissioner for the Portland Planning Commission. I'd like to introduce my partner, Sita Simonet. She's here, and she's a graduate student of the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine, which is the primary reason that brought us here to Portland. And I'd like to say that I think planning, being part of the Planning Commission, I hope to bring a lot of my own Indigenous cultural values and beliefs, and I always go to the source of who I am in my culture. So I'd like to share a saying, a Hawaiian saying that elders have taught me, and it's gotten me a long ways, and I present it to you here. Aohe hana nui ke alu ia, and that means no matter how big the task, it can always be done quicker and better together. So I hope to bring that to the Planning Commission. Mahalo. Thank you.
Great. Questions from the commissioners?
I think we have a new motto for the City of Portland.
There you go.
City that works is getting a little tired.
Yeah.
It was,
you know, Vera watches these. So.
You can look forward to a phone call as soon as you leave here.
Thank you very much. Did we have a sign-up sheet for this?
We did. No one else signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to address this nomination?
Thanks, I'm kidding.
This is a report. I need a motion and a second.
So moved.
Second. We're so excited. We're all willing.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Well, I want to thank you for your willingness to serve. This is a huge commitment, especially with the Portland plan about to be initiated. So I want to thank you for your willingness to serve. Aye.
Fish.
One of my former colleagues on the Housing Authority Board, Howard Shapiro, is one of your new colleagues to be, and I know how much time and effort it takes to be a successful member of the Planning Commission. So I congratulate you for taking this on, and thank you for your service to our city. Aye.
Leonard?
So thank you for coming. I really appreciated your comments, and hopefully you can, in addition to bring some Hawaiian culture, can bring Hawaiian weather for us as well.
I don't know if I can do that.
Maybe we can work on that. Thank you for serving. Aye.
Saltzman.
I also want to thank you, welcome you to the Planning Commission, and thank you for in advance for the service. It is, as has been said here, it's one of the more challenging, daunting citizen volunteer assignments we have in the city. There's lots of work, lots of reading, lots of hearings. So it's a good thing your partner's here today so she knows in advance all the things that you're committing yourself to do. But thank you.
You won't see her for months.
But yes, thank you, and especially at this crucial time as we work on the Portland plan. Thanks. Aye.
Potter.
Thank you, Leilani. Aye. Congratulations to you and your family. I'm going to move to the regular agenda. Please read item 1024.
Approve $510,776 from the Rainy Day Reserve and General Fund Contingency to cover overtime for police officers.
Commissioner Leonard, did you want to introduce that?
Did you want to introduce her? Do you want me to?
That's fine. This issue came up rather recently, and the Police Bureau in their initial budget for 08-09 requested this amount of money, and whoever the commissioner in charge was denied that. But now we're back here faced with the reality of the fact that it's an election year, that there are a lot of things going on, and it's important that we provide this resource to the Bureau so that they can maintain their level of service. So with that, Chief, did you want to come up and talk about this? And anybody else that wanted to address the issue?
Good morning. Mayor, right. Commissioners, Rosie Sizer, Chief of Police, and this feels a little bit like deja vu all over again because I recall back in November having a council informal discussion about police overtime, and what we talked about at that time is a historic overspending pattern of the last 15 years of an average of $1.5 million dollars over our budgeted overtime budget. The auditor did audits of our usage patterns in 2002 and a refreshed audit in 2005 and found that we were employing good management practices. The Bureau's financial analyst talked about various ways to remedy our overtime predicament. And then in the budget, we asked for ongoing money of $500,000 and $600,000 for dignitary protection for the election year in this fiscal year. Didn't get any of it. I sent out correspondence within the organization about our overtime practices with the idea that we had to retrench so we didn't put the Bureau's budget into crisis or the city's budget into crisis as we more rapidly hire to fill vacancies. And it's hard work. I mean, I think we are a leanly staffed organization given the demands for service that are placed upon us. And so it really was a discussion about making hard choices about what we could do and not do and what we could only do on overtime and the fact that there isn't sufficient overtime available. So I want to thank you for considering allowing us to dip into the rainy day fund, which is really made up partially of frozen police positions. And I think this will at least allow us to do two things. Allow us to retrench some from restrictions on optimal staffing level, and I can go into detail about what that means if you would like. And the other it will do is to put together really good plans for the visits that are going to occur as part of the general election cycle. So I'm very thankful, I'm very pleased, and just want to express to you that I intend to be a good steward of the public trust and also the public dollar, and I'll do what I can to live within our means, providing the best service that we have.
I guess I'm just curious. You said retrench some from optimal staffing.
Yeah, okay.
I guess if you can just give me a sort
it's
of
kind
brief
of explanation. Optimal staffing is shorthand for a strategy that's been taking place in East Precinct under the leadership of Commander Krebs for some time now. A little bit in the way of discussion about vacation. The PPA contract guarantees every member two vacation blocks. The signups occur in March, and based upon their seniority position, they are allowed two guaranteed vacation blocks. The vacation blocks, dependent on seniority, can be anywhere from 1 day to 4 weeks. If you're lower in seniority, you'll have probably available time between November and March. If you're high in seniority, you're going to have an opportunity to get vacation time in the summer. The strategy that we were employing regarding optimal staffing never impinged upon the guaranteed, contractually guaranteed blocks of vacation time. What it talked about was more last-minute requests for vacation and the idea that we have minimum staffing numbers for all of the precincts, so on every shift, we don't go below a certain staffing number. And if we do because someone calls in sick or has to go to training, then we'll hire back on overtime. And the strategy we were employing was on those more last-minute requests for vacation time, that we don't go to minimum staffing until we know that someone isn't going to call in vacation. So it was kind of a clunky process that only made it possible for people to know at the last minute whether their last-minute vacation request was going to be honored. That's probably as clear as mud, but it
stop right there.
It's pretty complicated stuff.
Okay.
But what I do want to make sure is people understand that what is guaranteed by the contract, we are totally honoring, and it was the other shorter and last-minute requests that were the things that were in danger.
Rosie, I know that we're here to discuss the overtime issue and not the challenges that the Bureau is facing with recruitment. But I do want to just note that if a young officer in your Bureau were to partner with a entry-level firefighter in today's city, they would not have a combined income to afford the medium-priced home in our city. But they are city employees. So as you deal with the challenges of recruitment and staffing, I would like to invite your thoughts with my Bureau as the Housing Commissioner of ways in which we may be able to develop strategies that enhance your recruitment efforts by addressing the affordability issue for folks who are in public service safety positions in our community.
Oh, I think that could be huge because the landscape has changed immeasurably since I was hired over 23 years ago and was hired and could afford to buy a house almost immediately. Part of the demands and real energy on some of our civic engagement is people want Portland police officers to live within the city of Portland. But I'm afraid very few of them, especially very early in their careers, can't Well, even if they want to, I'm not sure that they can afford to.
A third of our firefighters live in Portland. But increasingly, it's becoming challenging because of the cost structure, obviously, and right. the home price. So I would welcome working with you on that issue. And perhaps as we look at housing affordability, maybe strengthen your hand on recruitment.
That would be great.
Mayor Potter and Council, my name is Robert Kamm, the president of the Police Association. Today's issue in the short term for me has been about making sure that police officers who are working in the precincts on the various shifts have access to a day off. And I thank you for your willingness to find funds to restore sort of the model that we've gone by in the Police Bureau for many years, allowing people to have more advanced notice if they'd like to have a day off. And Commissioner Leonard in particular, I appreciate your willingness to meet with me and talk with me about these concerns and move forward with a resolution. And Mayor Potter, I thank you for being willing also to sign on to the resolution. And that I think this is it's a solution in the short term to this particular issue. But this recruiting and staffing and pay is all intermixed for me. And the one thing that I'm reminded of every day by my membership is that Portland police are slipping in our pay, both nationally and locally. We really were the highest paid in the state of Oregon until just a handful of years ago here with the Multnomah County settlement and the Port of Portland settlement, some other settlements. And then I know every one of you have heard me talk about the Seattle police settlement. They received a 25% pay increase over the cost, or 25% pay increase in a four-year time frame. It's 10% over the cost of living, but they're not the only ones. Long Beach and San Francisco and Honolulu and Oakland all have raises in that same range. And so one of the things we're concerned about is that we don't begin bargaining for at least the next 18 months. And we think that the recruiting problem that we're having today is going to get worse as the pay disparity becomes greater with the implementation of the Seattle settlement. The Seattle police officers will really make starting pay $20,000 more than Portland police officers, and at the top end, $20,000. So we'll have more and more qualified applicants applying in agencies like Seattle because Portland just simply is not competitive. So in addition to thanking you for your willingness to utilize some of these funds in the short term to help alleviate some of the pressure that we find ourselves under, my members have told me that if you all were willing today, I don't know if you can do this, if you're willing today to vote the Seattle pay raise on this at the same time that you vote for the resolution on the.
Would that include the conditions that the Seattle management got?
I know you've just forgotten. Something about concessions. I didn't mention that.
Yeah. So but as long I just, as we can talk about that.
Sure. Okay, this will be a longer conversation, yes, I suspect. So, but anyway, thank you very much for the support and the officers that I represent who are working on the street and who are taking radio calls for service every day in the city. I think genuinely appreciate it. And then I look forward to continuing this discussion about the Bureau budget and staffing and pay and working conditions with specifically with Commissioner Leonard and Mayor-elect Adams in this assessment and in this transition. I think there's some opportunities here to make improvements that'll make a real difference for all of us.
Thank you, folks. Did we have a sign-up sheet on this?
We did. One person signed up, Teresa Teeter.
You state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Sorry. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Teresa Teeter, downtown civil rights activist. Commissioner Fish, I want to commend you on your idea because that's exactly what I was going to testify on as a marketing package for Chief Sizer and them to start getting officers back into this town. HUD, I don't know what page it is, but down in the HUD book at the HUD office, there is a page for public service employees to get a first-time start, no down payment on a home, and 50% off on the price of your payments on the home, something to that effect. I could go down and find it for you. It would take me just a couple minutes because I quote it quite a bit. But that was going to be my suggestion. You've got to find a way to market your police department in a way that intrigues officers to come in from other parts of the country or something that aren't getting it as good elsewhere. And me being from the Midwest and all, It's low conservative income back in Nebraska, where I'm from, and they only pay like $42,000 a year, I believe it is, for a police officer. A whole bunch of them walked off the job last year in December due to high crime rates in North Omaha and stuff like that. Same problems you're having here. But when you have less pay, you want to not put out that much work because you're not feeling appreciated. So with the income that you have now for the officers here and offset it with a low-income first-time home ownership in the area, maybe the city council could pass some kind of tax, lower tax or something. I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, on their wages or something, so that, like military, so that they can be police officers and they can focus on their jobs. But with all the new laws that we have with the use of deadly use of force and things like that, there's a lot of things that make people not want to become police officers anymore because of all the new strict guidelines and everything for civil rights protections. So the housing thing, marketing, and then coming up with your regional training facility is a really big plus, and you get other communities like my town, Oregon City, to buy in and help you pay for this facility that you urgently need, then that's money you can put back into your police department. These folks renting your facility from you or something, so you can buy more officers and sweeten up the packages. And what with it being a political year and all, I know that Obama's on the way out here again sometime in the next few weeks, and he's just massive crowds. And the overtime, you know, you don't want burnout on these officers that you do have left. So please highly consider passing today what they urgently need. Thank you.
That's all who signed up.
Okay. It's a resolution. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Well, I want to congratulate the mayor and Commissioner Leonard and Robert King and Chief Rosie Sizer and the management of the Police Bureau for working on this. Our commitment to improve not only the work life of our folks that serve in our police bureau, but partnering with them to continually ongoing improve the quality of life of the city of Portland and the citizens of Portland. I think this will help. Aye.
Fish.
I seem to recall that Mr. King appeared before us about a week ago and expressed some concerns overall that his members wanted us to know about, and I'm pleased that within a week, we've tackled one of the issues that I think was on his plate, and sending a signal that we really appreciate the work of the men and women who wear the uniform and protect us. And I just also want to thank Chief Sizer, who's been working with me on some matters unrelated to this. I want to thank her for her responsiveness. Aye.
Leonard.
Well, I want to particularly thank Chief Sizer, Lene Berg, and Robert King for working with the mayor and I in a very dynamic, thoughtful process that helped us all work towards the solution that the council sees before it today. But also want to make a couple other observations that I think might be useful for the council as we start moving forward and thinking about how to tackle this problem of getting enough officers hired. Because to be clear, oftentimes we hear criticism that the council has not done enough to allow there to be officers hired to increase staffing, when the truth is that we actually have funded a number of positions as a council that remain unfilled. So the issue isn't whether or not at this point we go out and get more money for the police bureau budget. To be clear, it is that we figure out what is going on in hiring people and getting them into places that they're already funded positions for. I would just challenge a little bit as to whether or not we have a recruitment issue. I have some concerns that it is our internal hiring process that doesn't allow us to get the best and brightest police officers after we've selected them. Because if you can think about it just for a second, if you're a 25-year-old or 24-year-old young man or woman who's offered a job at the Beaverton Police Department, as you're waiting to get through the process at the Portland Police Bureau to be hired, you're going to take the job at the Beaverton Police Department, notwithstanding the fact you'd much rather work in Portland. But it's very important at 24 years old to have his paycheck. And that's the dynamic I think we're seeing play out. I know Tom Potter has been working on this, as has Chief Sizer. But I think it's important to frame the issue correctly as we move forward. But I do think one of the issues are, and this is a phenomenon we've had, as the council will recall, in a couple other bureaus, the 911 Center and the Bureau of Development Services, where, in fact, we have identified that the pay for 911 dispatchers and the pay, if you recall, a few years back for building inspectors was really so low that the pool of qualified people looking at coming to work for Portland at a lower pay than, for an example, Washington County or Clackamas County, decided to go to those entities to work because, frankly, the stress level was less and the pay was more. So that is, in fact, a dynamic that I think that we're, as a council, going to be charged with looking at as the contract comes up, if not before. But having said that, Robert's correct that there was a 24% wage increase in Seattle, but it was over 4 years, so it was 6.25% a year. But there were considerable concessions, if you want to call them concessions, in workplace rules that actually get to some of these staffing issues. So I would just conclude by saying there are a number of artificial barriers we place on ourselves to get police officers hired, and that's some of management's doing. That's some of the contract that the PPA has that creates that as well. So I look forward to trying to figure out what those are and addressing them piece by piece. If this issue that we have tackled in the last week is any precursor to the future, I look forward to us figuring all that out collaboratively, working together. And I've really appreciated what I've observed so far as to the professionalism and willingness of not only the chief's office, but certainly Robert King and his members in finding this solution that we're here voting on today. So thank you again, Mayor Potter, for your work on this. It couldn't have happened without your support. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I too want to thank Mayor Potter and Commissioner Leonard and also Robert King and Chief Sizer and Lene Berg for working hard and coming up with a good solution. So good leadership on Robert's behalf for his members. Aye.
Potter.
Well, I think this is a good solution to a really difficult problem. And I think that some of the reasons why this problem exists go back a long way. Some of them are found within the police bureau. Some of them are external. Nationally, police departments are having a very difficult time recruiting police officers. And that seems to go across the board in large towns and small. So it's, I think, something that has to be dealt with not just in terms of pay issues or process, but also to begin to look to see why people are giving up what I consider to be good jobs with fair wages and excellent benefits. And so I think as we look forward to trying to remedy the issue of not being able to hire, I think it's going to have to take into consideration some of these national trends and what's driving it, and are there any best practices out there in terms of how we do go about recruiting and hiring new officers. It's been around as long as I can remember, and that it seems like early in my career with the police bureau that it wasn't too difficult of a problem. But as time went on, I think that perhaps things have changed in terms of the kind of careers that people choose. But for me, I think it's a wonderful career. It's an honorable career, and it's a way to serve the public, unlike any other job that exists in our society. So I appreciate the efforts this morning and Commissioner Leonard's leadership and the union and all of the good folks that made this happen. I vote aye. Please read item 1025.
Accept contract with Mercer to provide actuarial services to the Bureau of Fire and Police Disability and Retirement.
Linda. Welcome back to council.
Good morning. I'm Linda Jefferson, the director of the Bureau of Fire and Police Disability and Retirement. And I'm here this morning about a contract that we would like your approval of for Mercer to do the actuarial services for the Fire and Police Disability and Retirement Program. And I would like to know if you have any questions.
Could you give a 30-second version of what this function provides for FPDNR?
The actuarial contract will provide is periodic studies of the for funding purposes of the program, looking at our not only what our historical experience has been relative to our disability programs and our retirement requirements, but also looking at what the trends and the projections are and how they may impact what the future fund requirements are of the program. This contract will also provide for any incidental services that may be related to any of the financial activities, doing an audit or an independent assessment as on a case-by-case basis as requested. So that's pretty much in what's involved. They do a complete study every 2 years, and then they do on the off years a more limited review of the program and provide a report to the Board of Trustees.
Also, another brief question, and that is the voters voted in some significant changes to FBNR almost 2 years ago.
Yes.
Could you let the public and us know how things are going with that, and what is the status, and perhaps how this actuarial will help focus on the issues that still need to be resolved?
Well, the as a result of the reform from 2006, there have been a number of significant changes, including the actual makeup of the organization. The FPDNR is now a bureau with a new kind of organizational makeup. We have secured the staffing that I believe is necessary to better manage the program. We have hired a number of experienced disability management personnel who have really, I feel, been able to develop a better relationship with our the beneficiaries of the disability program and put different procedures in place that better help to address their individual needs and then the needs of the organization as a whole. We are just getting in place additional resources that are needed to complete the different pieces that we believe need to be put in place to further secure the intent of the reforms a couple of years ago. But everything is moving along very well. We had support not only from the Board of Trustees with the direction, but also from the mayor's office. So I feel very optimistic about us being at a point where we can say with confidence that we've addressed those issues that were that were really of concern when the reform came about a couple of years ago. Any other questions?
I just one question: is Mercer is this a new job for them to be our actuary?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, there was a previous company doing that.
There was a previous company,
so this is a new company
that had been employed by FPDNR for a number of years.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Other questions? Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Did we have a sign-up sheet on this?
I did not.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this specific issue? It's an emergency. Call the vote.
Adams.
Good work.
Aye. Thank you.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Yes, I want to express my thanks to you folks, too. And I know when Commissioner Adams assumes his role on the Board of Trustees in January that he'll appreciate what you folks have been doing. So great. I vote aye.
Thank you very much.
Please read item 1026.
Amend Portland Comprehensive Plan map and zoning map for properties along and adjacent to Killingsworth Street, between Northeast 14th Avenue to 17th Avenues.
Call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Seltzman?
Well, again, good work, Debbie Bischoff, and also all the neighbors who really identified this issue as something, and our neighborhood liaison, planning liaison, was able to really run with this in a relatively quick amount of time. So, as I said last week, you can bring us these types of love fest anytime you want. Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read item 1027.
Pay claim of Marion Scoro.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Randy Stenquist, City's Risk Management Office.
Good morning, Mayor and Council Members. Scott Modi with the Portland City Attorney's Office. We're here today to seek your approval regarding settlement of a lawsuit. And I'll just briefly give you the details of it. Plaintiff is the owner of two pieces of real property in Southeast Portland. The plaintiff sought to develop these properties, and in turn, the city sought to have plaintiff dedicate land to widen the sidewalks abutting the, these developments. Plaintiff objected and filed a lawsuit. Following discovery in the case and motions that were filed by each side, there were no real factual disputes. And in this case, the federal judge ruled against the city on one piece of property and set trial to determine damages. As to the other piece of property, the judge also set trial on the validity of city policy and for damages. And given that the plaintiff here originally sought in excess of $3 million in delay damages, lost profits, lost rents, and other matters, we decided to mediate the case to see if we couldn't come to some sort of a resolution. First, we tried federal judge, Judge Coffin, going down to Eugene. That was unsuccessful. We then tried retired Oregon Supreme Court Justice William Riggs. That went for a period of several weeks on three different days, and we came to what we thought was something that we could live with, and that is we now seek approval for a $300,000 settlement, which includes everything. We recommend this for the following reasons. One, it saves taxpayer dollars. To fight through trial and appeals would be far in excess of the settlement. Two, and perhaps most importantly, is I think the settlement gives the city an opportunity here to consider future code changes regarding developer sidewalk responsibilities. And this will give us an opportunity to do that. Three, plaintiff has agreed he is going to widen the sidewalk at one of the locations to our desired 12 feet, the other is at 10 feet, and that will remain the same. Four, it stops attorney fees rolling on both sides. You know, a lot of times that's what ends up running these cases, and it's over and done with. Finally, I think the city should be in a better position in the future if we face this type of thing again after being able to review what we have in place and perhaps also our strategy in terms of what court we select and that type of thing. And so on that basis, I'd ask Mayor and Council Members to approve the settlement.
I had a question, and it dealt with what's going to happen in the future. How do these kind of issues keep from being brought up again and us being back here voting on a settlement?
And I would respond to that in the following ways, which is, one, what we're going to do is take a look at our city code and our pedestrian design guidelines, which is essentially what gives us the authority to impose these conditions when property owners seek to develop property. What we're going to try to do is bolster our reasoning in those design guidelines on the one hand, and also try to consider making the criteria more specific as to the city code. That in turn, when the case law, you know, that's been developed is applied to our guidelines and code, that should give us a better position with the court. That's one thing. Number two, in this case, we wound up in federal court, and next time we will seek to be in state court. And I think that will also help us, because I think the judges are not necessarily better able to deal with the issue, but I think it's a forum where they see the issue more frequently. So on those two items, I think that's how I think we'll be better off in the future, Mayor.
Just to clarify, as I understood, this case evolved around the plaintiff's allegation that this amounted to a takings, and that because it went from a request for his 6-foot sidewalk to a 12-foot sidewalk. Go back to what you just said, though, and tell me, how is this going to work in the future in terms of preventing a future similar allegation?
Certainly.
Make sure I heard it. I didn't know if I heard that.
Certainly. Basically, in the analysis on this type of case, you have to apply the criteria to each different development and each different piece of property. It's a separate animal, essentially, unto itself. So every piece of property is different, and every development is different. And so the criteria that gets applied is, without boring you too much, is on the one hand, there must be a rational nexus between what the city is seeking from the property owner and what the property owner intends to do with respect to the property. Then there also needs to be what's called a rough proportionality. So one of the things that we've thought about doing here is changing some of the ways that the developers, when they develop these properties, the information that they are providing us on the front end as well. And so what ends up happening is we will, if we bolster our code and we bolster our guidelines, that will help with the rational nexus piece that the court applies. And so when the, you know, Mayor, when you ask, how are we going to improve in the future, the answer to that is we will have, number one, hopefully a better process in terms of what the developer is providing to us, which will help us analyze it earlier in the process. And then number two, if we bolster our code and our design guidelines, when the court looks at the rational nexus analysis, they'll have better and improved reasoning to apply, and hopefully that prevents us from being back here again, say, you know, 2 years from now or whenever it might be.
Mayor, I have a question. I'm a big believer in mediation. Most of the civil rights work I did got resolved in mediation. And in fact, Sid Lezak, the former U.S. attorney, was usually the mediator. We miss him greatly. But I'm also given, and a good mediation, as you know, is a mediation where both sides feel somewhat aggrieved and unhappy with the outcome.
Yes, I would agree with that.
But as I look at the pleadings and the file in this matter, I mean, one problem we had is that they assert a federal claim. And once a federal claim is asserted, that gives the plaintiff the right to go to federal court. federal court is much more expensive than state court, for the benefit of my colleagues. I mean, for the plaintiff's bar in employment cases would prefer to stay in state court because it's just much more expensive to process a case. Does your office consider mediation pre-summary judgment in select cases? I understand you had a decision by a federal judge that then you went into mediation, but are there occasions when you either get a tort claim notice or a complaint that you'll go to mediation at an earlier stage?
Yeah, Commissioner, I love this type of question, and actually this is the first time I've ever been down here.
Of course you do. I just want to say it's about time we had a lawyer on this panel.
Yeah,
can
absolutely.
The rest of us go have coffee while you have this conversation?
It's about time we had a lawyer.
And he was nervous about being here yesterday.
Yeah. you know,
pay no attention to the amateurs in the room. It's about time we had a lawyer on this panel.
And absolutely 100%. You know, I've actually been with the city attorney's office now for 10 years, or coming up on 10 years. And that's something we do frequently. And in fact, in this particular case, when I mentioned that we attempted to do that first with Judge Coffin, that was pre-filing of these summary judgment motions. And then once we got the court's ruling, then we went to Judge Riggs and over that six-week period.
I mean, I personally sort of have a problem with the amount here that we're going to approve, but what I have learned about mediation is when you have someone like a Judge Riggs at that level and they're evaluating the case and they're telling you that you're going to incur more cost to pursue the case than you will in terms of settling it, I think that the taxpayers at least know that we're stopping the hemorrhaging at that point. And so that's important.
Yeah, and agreed. You know, that was one of the key points, obviously, that Judge Riggs imposed upon the city. You know, and similarly, you know, the cost to the plaintiff in this case, you know, trying to get his development going. And, you know, there, even though he was ahead, you know, there's no guarantees, as you know, in litigation in terms of what happens. But the idea is, why spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars 10 years from now and maybe we're just back at trial or something in that regard. So the idea here is let's stop, you know, spending the taxpayer dollars, get this one resolved, take a look at our processes and try to move forward.
And I will add that as a participant in those mediations with Judge Riggs, he was hugely effective in getting both parties to move off of their original positions. I mean, the plaintiff came in with some pretty fantastic demands, and the city's position early on was, we don't think that we need to pay any money on this thing. And then as it developed, crunched the numbers a lot, but both parties moved significantly from their opening positions in this multi-day mediation process, multi-week, frankly. So it was a good process, and I think we all came out of it having learned an awful lot. And I'd like to also just thank PDOT staff, who were enormously helpful and patient and willing participants in this whole process.
Other questions? Thank you, folks. Is there a sign-up sheet for this?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Is there anyone here who wishes to address this specific issue? It's an emergency call to vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Aye. Please read item 1028.
Amend Portland Water Bureau Customer Service Administrative Rules.
Commissioner Leonard?
Does Water Bureau want to say anything about these? Okay, I think we've had a presentation prior to this. Prepared to.
Okay, is there anyone signed to testify on this matter?
We took testimony last week, but there is an amendment to this one. Is even the amendment?
So are we amending it today, or is it?
Was today,
it?
Yes.
Okay, and that was what you were going to work on, Ben?
Right. There was an amendment that was, I believe, distributed to the council.
Okay. Which is in Exhibit A, is that right?
It's in the resolution itself.
It's in the resolution. It's a final, be it further resolved, which identifies when the amendments to the policies will take place to coincide with the amendments with the city code.
With the 6 struck out?
Yes, that should be 17, not 100. I don't think we have a Title 167, at least not yet.
Title 17. So I'd move the amendment.
Second.
Call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please call the vote on the resolution.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read item 1029.
Amend code to clarify duties and responsibilities of the Portland Water Bureau.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read item 1030.
Repeal ordinances that gave authority to the Portland Water Bureau's chief engineer to approve, accept, release or dispose of easements and other real property interests.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams.
Well, over serious concerns about this agenda item, I'm going to vote for it anyway. Just kidding. Aye.
I appreciate that.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. We're recessed until 6 p.m.
Chair, if I may, I'd like to express the good wishes and the warmest feelings of this council to Mayor Vera Katz, who may be watching this.
She's actually not watching on the gavel.
You're on your own, buddy.
Yeah. I was just looking for a little cover here. Yeah. I was looking for a little cover.
The door of your office.
Yeah. I was just looking for a little cover, a little collegial here.
You think we're kidding.
You're on your own. I would never do that, Vera.
So I'm going to be about 30 minutes late.
Yes, I
know. You want to come down. Oh, and
notes. Thank you.
Ready?
So, Tom, you want to walk over at the city attorney's desk? Yeah. Grab a box of bricks.